Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duver and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, Tuesdays at 4 a.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. We're brought to you by Broadview Mortgage, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. And CIO Solutions, providing superior IT services to companies and nonprofit organizations in the Tri-County area. They're experts at managing and maintaining IT networks with the resources to solve any problem. And Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution. Diane, good to see you.
Good to see you as well, Neil. I want to compliment you. You're getting my name more and more correct each week.
Despite the fact that you spell it wrong.
Despite that fact, yes.
Yes.
In your opinion.
Well, Diane is spelled D-I-A-N-E, but she spells it D-I-N-N-E.
No, D-I-A-N-N-E.
Well, yeah, but you have an extra. You have too many N's.
I have two N's.
Two N's. That's the problem.
the way you look at it.
Well,
you know.
Do you know who Paul Anker is?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, this is an age problem because Paul Anker was one of the most popular singers in 1959, and his first song was Diana, which was a huge hit, and it was spelt the way you spelled Diana.
Well, you realize my mom and dad are about your age, so I'm not sure it is an age problem. I didn't choose my name.
Thank you for putting that fact on the table. I appreciate that.
So good to see you, Neil.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Do we have a guest today?
We do. We're thrilled to have Laurel Sykes from Montecito Bank and Trust. She is their chief risk officer and compliance. And she's the chief risk officer and senior vice president of Montecito Bank and Trust. Sorry, I butchered that. Is that
it's
right?
Quite all right. It's quite all right. Yes.
We're thrilled to have you, and we're going to be talking about cyber crime and security today. And thank you for being here with us.
You're welcome. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, and thank the bank has been a really important institution in this community in so many ways in terms of support for not-for-profits. And one of the things we're going to be talking about is that the services and the information you provide is an extra added benefit to being a client of Montecito Bank and Trust. So I think businesses as well as the public should thank you for all of the things that you do as a bank and you personally in a very important area. But first, we're going to begin, like we always begin, with some of the interesting articles that Diane and I picked up over the last week that we think is relevant to your money.
And Laurel, feel free to jump in at any point.
And this is actually two articles, which I find really fascinating. These two articles were in the Saturday edition of the New York Times and the Saturday edition of the Wall Street Journal. So both of them, front page, had the following articles. Let me read you the headline of the New York Times first. Hiring slows, but pickup in wages buoys hopes. That's the headline in the New York Times. Hiring slows, but pickup in wages buoys hopes. In the Wall Street Journal, it says wages grow modestly, but payrolls report offers murky reading on our economy's health. So two articles had a totally different spin on exactly the same statistics.
You find that so much. It's one of those things where if you exclusively only read one news outlet, you oftentimes get a slanted viewpoint, if you would.
And this is why, and I don't want to get involved in politics. Well, I do, but I shouldn't.
I was going to say, oh, you do.
When someone says the particular candidate doesn't know that much, but once they become once they are elected, they'll be able to hire good people. But what if you have two great newspapers like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and you get these facts in front of you, but you don't know how to read it? And one of the reasons why, I think what Diane does is really fantastic, being a financial advisor, is that people who think they can do it on their own is like someone reading their own x-rays and is not a physician. You really need to be able to understand these facts because the facts in the rest of the article is identical. The statistics were identical, but the conclusion is completely diametrically opposed. So you need somebody that really understands it in order to be, I think, successful in investing. The second article I brought in, I think, touches on a lot of people in Santa Barbara, which is headlined, What? Me Worry? munis stay buoyant. And the article essentially is talking about the fact that we've had in the news the possible collapse of Puerto Rico and the collateral damage that will do to many investors who invested in Puerto Rican municipal bonds, and it has had no effect on the municipal bond market in general.
It's actually fascinating. The Puerto Rico bonds are pricing as if nothing's going on. There are no issues.
Yeah. I mean, there's this view because, it, as the article points out, the default rate among municipal bonds has been over the last 10 years 0.14% versus corporate bonds, which has been 11.58%. So it's been really insignificant. There's really hardly any defaults because, you know, school districts and local governments simply can't liquidate. So there's it's very unlikely. But the fact that there's been not only no movement, but municipal bonds have been one of the bright spots in the marketplace in the last 3-4 months is showing you what me worry. No one seems to care.
It is fascinating. It will be only time will tell how it will all play out. I think it's June 7th. The date is coming right up.
That's right, and we're waiting. You know, waiting for the hedge funds to make a decision on how much they're going to push Puerto Rico. We have a country now where the hedge funds, not the Fed, is going to determine whether or not a semi-state in this country will survive.
I know it's.
First they did Venezuela, now they're doing Puerto Rico. You know, so this we talked last week about EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, taxes, and amortization, and how so many investors are buying into what companies have been putting out as a substitute for earnings, making these metrics become the face of the company. They footnote that they have earnings per share, but they make adjustments to their earnings that I think are really not appropriate. And this article, which was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, talks about finance's hot new metric, ROIC. ROIC is return on invested capital as defined by companies like General Motors and Goldman Sachs, where they take earnings before interest and taxes, less taxes, over debt plus equity, less cash and cash equivalents. So in English, that means they're taking after-tax earnings before interest, using that as a numerator to determine how much return on equity that they're achieving in a year, and looking at that over a number of years to see how companies are allocating capital and how they're being a good or bad shepherd for investors' money. The problem with that, as same as we talked about last week, and what I find incredible, whether what I'm about to say is right or wrong, it wasn't even discussed in the article. They're excluding from this calculation interest on debt, where the debt is used to create the earnings that are used to decide whether someone is actually succeeding. So can you imagine as an individual, if you could borrow money, invest that money, but not have to calculate the interest that's costing you to borrow that money in terms of what your return is. I mean, what if you're borrowing money at 10% and earning 2%? Are you really making 2%? No, you're losing 8%.
Right. It's almost worse than that. It's almost like they're not even putting it on their balance sheet at all. And last week when we were talking about the pro forma method, it was pretty much earnings and then you take out all the right. Other stuff that you don't want to include, all the bad stuff. So it's really giving a misleading viewpoint of how the company is doing, in my opinion.
Well, what I find really incredible, and I spent, you know, many, many years on Wall Street and I taught investments at City College, is that the textbooks don't address this issue. That this article, the front page of the Wall Street Journal, talks about how General Motors is really beginning to look at the metric that Goldman Sachs is recommending, and nobody tells the other side. I don't get it. It's like, you know, Alice in Wonderland. And then people don't understand why the stock market has a collapse every once in a while. Anyway, so that's and if elected, I promise to change all that.
Sounds like you're going down the rabbit hole, Neil.
Yeah. Speaking of rabbit holes, our last article is a article about financial engineering. And it's called Financial Engineering Shows Its Downside. And they use as examples Valiant and SunEdison. Now, you know, it's easy to take a shot at those two companies, but let's take a shot at those two companies because it really involves just more than those two companies. It's about doing roll-ups, which means buying a bunch of smaller companies in your industry, by borrowing money, taking that money and buying your own stock which drives the stock up in terms of price, and then using your high-priced stock to buy a company. So unless the companies you buy benefit from some economies that you put into effect or better management, at the end of the day, you're left with a lot of debt and a bunch of disparate companies. So you can create a perceived growth in earnings by buying a bunch of companies, but you can't sustain true secular growth, particularly when you're creating debt to buy these companies. And so they're showing this as a problem with Valeant, but you know, everyone's picking on Valeant now, but this is true for many, many companies.
It is, and you know, driving that stock price up, it's in essence buying your stock price, driving it up, and then buying things with your stock. You know, it gives you a false sense of what's actually going on in terms of earnings. The way it does work, though, is if in fact these companies can create efficiencies in their business and their growth revenue increases and their overhead decreases. But that would be the only way it would work.
Absolutely, and that's the claim, but that's not what the expertise of these companies have been. They say we have good financial engineering. Financial engineering doesn't grow a business.
Absolutely not.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Listeners are reminded that the information provided on this show is general in nature and may not apply to their personal investment situation. Individuals should consult their chosen financial professionals before making any decisions. Arlington Financial Advisors is a separate entity from WFA Finet. Neither WFA Finet nor its financial professionals are legal or tax advisors.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Broadview Mortgage. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
Hi, Neil.
Hi,
how
Diane.
You doing?
Looking good. You look very nice today, by the way.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, and you know, she has this beautiful dress on, but it's got
it's a pattern.
Pattern. And we had lunch today, and we actually switched tables because the wallpaper conflicted with the pattern, and I'm very
sensitive. It wasn't bothering me at all.
Well, you weren't looking at it. So I was very sensitive, and I thought it was interfering with your image. So now we have a white background, so you look very beautiful today. So that's,
thank you, Neil.
Welcome.
Gosh, compliments. I love Mondays. So we're in studio today with Laurel Sykes, who's a senior vice president at Montecito Bank and Trust. Her area that she is in charge of is risk and compliance. And Laurel, welcome. Thanks for coming today. And tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, as far as what I do for the bank, a lot of it is around regulatory compliance and laws and regulations, but also fraud, cybersecurity, and anti-money laundering. And that's sort of how I came about in the position that I'm in now. It was more a function of where the industry was going as I was working up through the ranks of compliance. You know, I started in compliance in the late 90s, sorry.
I was going to say, wow, you look amazing.
What are your secrets? I age well. About 97 or so, I started in a compliance specialty before it was really even a career. And shortly thereafter, we had the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which, as you all know, is the financial modernization law that was created because banks were starting to buy up insurance companies. And they didn't want people being able to share client data amongst each other without some protections. So I was introduced to privacy and information security back then. Then 9/11 happened. And suddenly, with 9/11, banks were being asked to look into bank accounts and how could we have prevented the attacks and could we have seen something in the financial patterns of these terrorists. I think it was said that there was about $500,000 used to commit these attacks, so not a huge amount, but $300,000 went through U.S. bank accounts. So I was brought into the anti-money laundering regime and learned a lot about fraud and fraud scams and the kinds of things to be watching out for. And fast forward to now, you know, our bank actually implemented an information security and fraud department in 2010 before cyber started even becoming lingo that we were using as banks. And in about 2 years ago, the bank made the decision to separate the two disciplines between fraud and information security. And now I've got two departments, one in fraud and one in cybersecurity, to oversee what's going on. And we're out here now educating people about what to watch for and things that we're seeing in the back shop.
Which is so wonderful because, you know, you hear about these scams that happen all the time I've even had one myself where, you know, they'd call me and say they're going to report me to the IRS.
Oh,
and,
fantastic.
You know, they basically were calling 8 times a day.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think to myself, they sound very threatening, the voicemails that they leave you, mm-hmm. that naturally they called me so much and left me so many voicemails, I called them back to kind of play with them. And I can only imagine if I were, you know, 80 and home alone, and it's scary and threatening. And so now Montecito Bank and Trust, you at Montecito Bank and Trust have a program that you go and educate the community on these types of scams and how to kind of protect yourself and your information.
Absolutely. So our financial literacy is really trifold. We started with the kids, and we go out and force in schools and teach about financial literacy and how to save and techniques and tools. And we've really done a lot in that space in the last 10 years. And then more recently, we've started doing these cybersecurity events for business customers and consumers to learn about cyber fraud, how it happens, how to protect yourself. And then the other thing that we've seen is a huge jump in crimes against elders. And, you know, that's a really challenging space because it's said that as we age, our ability to discern deceit starts to leave us. So a lot more susceptible to these types of fraud scams, and the ones that still have landlines, and the ones that may be lonely and may be sitting at home taking phone calls and believing things that aren't really true. You know, how many of us have gotten that call that we won the sweepstakes or foreign lottery or whatever?
You know, it's very interesting. You know, Montecito Bank and Trust, although larger than all of the other quote-unquote community banks, has differentiated itself by thinking about things and issues that affect this population that go beyond the normal expectations of being a bank. And this is an example of really going that extra mile and a half, because it is something that affects probably, could affect certainly everyone in the community. And you don't really see, you know, Chase Manhattan coming in here and saying, I think we ought to worry about, you know, some elderly person being defrauded. So it's really a great thing that you guys are doing that.
So, Laura, what types of tips do you give the seniors to protect themselves?
Usually the biggest red flag to watch out for in any kind of scam, and they all share very common trends, is the sense of urgency. You have to do this now. What they want is they want people to take action and send their money out before they've checked with somebody. You know, a lot of different types of scams are touching our elders, the sweepstakes and the lotteries, of course, but also the imposter scams, where someone has done enough research on you to know that maybe you have a grandchild, or maybe they don't know that you have a grandchild and they're making a guess. And the scariest one that we saw a lot of last year was this grandparent scam, where the fraudsters would call in to an elder and pretend to be a grandchild. Either I just committed a crime, I'm in jail on a drug charge, I hit a foreign national and I'm in another country, please wire $50,000. And, you know, they're crying on the phone, so they can't really tell, their ears can't tell that it's not their grandchild. And they're really scared. They're taught to fear, similar to your IRS scam. They're taught to fear that something bad is going to happen if they don't act now. And their job, you know, the fraudster's job is to really make sure that the money gets sent out quickly so that nobody can talk you out of it.
Yeah, at my firm, that's one of what we tell our clients is you have to call us, mm-hmm. and we know you, and mm-hmm. you know that's one of the ways that you're protected. And if a client called with something along those lines, they have to call us, and we'd say, really, are you sure that was Sue or you know your grandchild?
Absolutely.
And so it's definitely one of those things where people are fearful. So mm-hmm. in that, what type of advice do you give people in that scenario to check with your children or check with your advisor?
Stop, think, and call. And call whoever it is.
I like that. It's like stop, drop, and roll.
Exactly. Stop, think before you click. We do a lot of stop and think. That's typically our advice. But we also want to be training the adult children of older Americans, because those are the ones that can be watching out for the red flags. We train our entire banking staff to watch out for certain buzzwords and key things. If someone comes in with an email and they're nervous and they're supposed to be wiring money to another country, we'll ask, you know, can we see that? Can we help you? What's the purpose of the wire? What are you doing this for? If they're withdrawing cash, we have a flyer we can hand out that gives them some red flags and tips. And we're doing a lot in this space as well on our Facebook page and trying to get the word out there via social media.
Yeah, the international wire is a red flag altogether.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's one of those things where international. Now, do you guys have to have the client on the line? Do they go through the compliance department? How does that work? Walk us through. If I were a client of the banks and I walked in and wanted to send a $25,000 wire to Hong Kong.
So in most cases, we do require that a customer comes into the bank to be identified and to go through the proper channels to do the signature on the piece of paper, and also so that we can talk to them about the transaction. Certain clients do have agreements on file where they can wire out with an email or a phone request, but we've seen such an increase in email wire fraud as well, where clients are thinking that they're acting on their CEO's advice, they're acting on their executive director at a nonprofit, and they think they're being told to go in and wire out $25,000, and only to find out a day or two later it wasn't their CEO, the email had been hacked, and now the money is out of the bank. So really, we have a lot in place that may seem like an inconvenient thing at the time, but when we explain to customers why we're doing it and what they need to be watching out for, we've been really successful in helping people to really stop fraud.
That's great, because I see here in your packet of information that cyber thieves stole nearly $2.3 billion from businesses in the last 3 years through financial scams. Mm-hmm. And that was through the FBI in April of this year. Mm-hmm. So that is a lot of money.
And that's actually just the email compromise scam. I think it's $400 billion in the last year just for cybercrime across the space.
So $2.3 billion basically was sent to a financial institution via email that a wire then was sent.
Exactly.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by CIO Solutions, that has the expertise and resources to manage their clients' technical needs so they can focus on their business. We can be reached at 564-1290, and someone actually already knew the number because we have someone on the line. Hi there.
Hi.
What's your name?
Richard.
Hi, Richard. So what's your question?
Question is, I've got quite a few elderly clients, and I am wondering how to help them with protecting themselves from cybercrime. I have a lot of different passwords, and these folks are not all local with me, so I don't see them all the time, and I'm just wondering how I could help refer them to a service or some other protocol that would help keep track of all these passwords that they have to deal with today to reduce fraud.
Great question. What tips do you have for them, Laurel?
Well, as far as passwords go and tips, we do like you do, and we recommend that you have multiple different passwords. If you're using the same password in every application you're logging into or every bank you're logging into, and someone gets a hold of that password, obviously they now have access to everything that you've got.
Right, but how do you remember all these passwords? I think, I feel like I'm resetting my password because I can't remember it every other day.
You do, and there's password keepers. You're going to want to make sure to pick the right one. An example of that is Secure Safe, and what you do is you establish multi-factor authentication to get into the password keeper so that any password you have there is kept. But then we're challenged, and we're challenged because what if we don't remember that password and can't get into that? And we see sometimes clients will do things like sticky notes on their computer with all their passwords, and then you might have a caregiver or somebody coming into the home on a construction job that now all of a sudden has access to all of your login information. And it's challenging. I think that the best thing to do is to remember to keep your passwords as complex as possible. Make them be something that you'll remember. You can also work with your bank to establish challenge questions and answers, which are great because if you can't remember something, they can identify you by asking, who was your first name of your childhood, kindergarten teacher, or what was your favorite book? Things that maybe
you can remember that.
Well, exactly. And pick something that is something easy for you to remember. But you need to use things in a combination of passwords and information that maybe only you know, that's not something you can search for online by checking a social media page of a grandchild or something like that.
So all my passwords is one word, Diane. So do you think I should change them?
add 1, 2, 3, 4 at the end and you're
well,
good.
Well,
no,
because no one will know if it's two N's, one N, and A, no one knows.
That's why I picked it.
Absolutely.
Richard, did that help with answering your question?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. So, that's a great question because I find, you know, I have this client who has Parkinson's, mm-hmm. and he continues to check his accounts.
Oh yeah,
we've probably had that a lot probably four or five times a day. And he keeps forgetting his passwords, and then he keeps resetting it. And he has an adult child that helps, but now the adult mm-hmm. child's locked out, and it's very challenging mm-hmm. to have them, and frustrating. You know, it's challenging his independence mm-hmm. and competency, and it is a big deal. So you would recommend, what was the name of that?
Secure Safe.
Secure Safe as a password keeper.
A lot of them, yeah, absolutely. I don't think we're supposed to necessarily
endorse.
Yes.
What I find frustrating is when I use my iPhone and I get a request for my password. If it's an Apple password and I think it's two or three times I get the letter wrong, you're mm-hmm. done. Mm-hmm. You're out.
And then you can't use that same password for another six Absolutely. Months or six cycles or something.
You know, and until we get to true tokenization or even, you know, fingerprints, we've got Touch ID, for example, on our mobile banking app so that people can get in without having to remember that password. It does your fingerprint. So there's a lot of different things that are happening in the industry to move us forward away from just a password-driven organization. Multi-factor, two-step authentication is just critical, especially on our email accounts. If everybody's not aware, if you have Gmail or Yahoo or another one of these service providers, don't just have a password. You can do two-step authentication, and that way if someone is logging into your account from a PC that's not recognized by Gmail, it'll send you an email or a text, however you wish to be communicated, and let you know. So there's a lot we can do to protect ourselves.
So when you say two-step authentication, so mm-hmm. it means you log in, mm-hmm. you type in your password, mm-hmm. you say, you know, click the login button or whatever Correct. Words they have for that. And then what's that next step authentication? Just a notification if you're from an unfamiliar device?
You can establish a lot of different ways, and it's different for each provider. Typically, it's going to be like a text message, and you get a code on your text message. So it's something that's out of band from whatever channel you're in. If you're in email and you're getting an email bounce back that says, you know, here's the code, then that's obviously not as secure. But depending on what service you're using, there's a lot of different animals. For businesses, the two-step authentication we use in our online banking platform is a token. And that's great because it's very hard to hack that information. People might have your user credentials and your passwords, but that token is something that you push a button and for 10 seconds it displays a number that you must key in. And then it goes away. So those types of things are going to keep you a lot more safe.
But for individuals, a token isn't usually cost effective, right? There's a cost to have that token key that has a number that's changing every 30 seconds or 10
Correct.
Seconds.
Correct. And security is it's a hot topic for us at the bank right now. So one of the things we are doing is we're implementing new online banking and mobile banking platforms by the end of this year. And one of them will be soft tokens that aren't necessarily the hard token that we mail out to consumers. But consumers will be able to protect their banking accounts as well.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I have an account with a local bank here and their email password, you can't reset online. So you have to actually call and get a reset. And then every 6 months it expires.
Absolutely.
So I have online banking. So it sends me the statement only to online, which I can't log into. So I haven't logged in months. Fortunately, I don't use that account very often or I'd be bouncing checks. So anywho, but yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that we have for online banking is we do a partnership with IBM on a platform called Trusteer. And it's a free downloadable piece of software that you can put on your PC, and it'll help to detect potential malware on your computer. So if there is something on your computer that's looking for your online banking credentials, or maybe you're entering information over a site that's not as secure, it'll give you alerts and tips and tricks. And
that brings up another scam that's going on. Mm-hmm. Just 2 weeks ago, I got a call from, I'm calling to help you with your computer. I'm seeing that you have something on your computer. And, I have my landline forwarded to my cell phone. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you just hang up. But that's a scam that I've had many clients call Absolutely. Me and say, Diane, I'm worried that, you know, I had something on my computer. And for $30, they were mm-hmm. able to check it. Isn't that wonderful?
And yeah. And now they have something else nice on their computer.
Right.
We actually see that quite a bit. And our big thing is don't click on links, period, end of story. If you're going to go to a website, go to it out of band from an email that you've been sent. We had a client last year that clicked on a link similar to that. They thought they were getting their PC cleaned up and fixed because it was slow or not performing, and they thought it was IBM or whoever it was. They clicked on the link and they watched as the fraudster was able to remote into their PC and start playing around with their online banking. And they called us just frantic. And fortunately, we were able to unplug the computer and had another backup computer. But if you are going to have a computer that does get infected, we recommend backups. Backup your data, everything that you need to have, because another thing that we're seeing a trend in is ransomware. And that's where you clicked on a link and accidentally downloaded something to your computer that locks your files and encrypts all your files and effectively renders your computer useless unless you pay the money.
And so it's like holding your computer hostage.
Correct. And, you know, from what we hear, they've got really good customer service. As soon as you pay the fee, they unlock the computer and you're good to go. So at least they're good on that front. But be very aware and, you know, implement things so that you don't have to make those kinds of payments.
Absolutely. Gosh. So Neil, did you hear that? If somebody clicks on, don't click on any links on your computer.
No, it wasn't a question of hearing it. It was a question of remembering it. Hearing is no problem.
Think before you click. There you go.
So are there any industries that are particularly vulnerable that you focus on?
You know, the big thing that we're seeing right now is not so much these software campaigns, these malware campaigns, but it's the email compromise scam where the wires get sent out. We do see attorney firms being hit. Our CPAs will report that, hey, my client sent me a wire for a request for a wire, only to find out it wasn't really their client. We see nonprofits being a target here locally. In the last 6 months or so, we've seen at least 4 nonprofits fall prey to this email compromise scam. We do have information on our website for anybody that's interested at Montecito.bank. There's financial scams on the rise. There's an alert you can follow, and it'll give you a link to this flyer that we're doing on the wire frauds that we're seeing so that people have some tips.
You know, the expression you've been using is fraudster, and it sounds like they're nice people. You know, that's just a fraudster.
Or crook or criminal.
A criminal, but fraudster sounds like it's, you know, a criminal light.
Absolutely.
But given the people that they target, it's not such a criminal light. Are there any particular if you ask me where they're from, I'd say the Ukraine or Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Where are they? Are they
the
from every place?
The poor Ukrainians.
Yeah. Where are they from? Are they from every place?
They're definitely overseas, and that's the beauty of this, right? They don't have to show up in a bank anymore and rob the bank. Yeah. They do this online. Asia, you know, we've seen a lot of requests going to Hong Kong and China in these scams. Russia, some of these grandparent scams we're seeing, Canada, Mexico, so it's all over the place.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Streets in downtown Santa Barbara.
Diane. And during the break, we were just talking about the Jimmy Kimmel spoof of how he goes around and interviews people and says, you know, what's your email password? Just don't give it out. That's what we've determined. Do not give out your password or private information
Absolutely.
Of any kind.
Absolutely.
But, you know, sometimes, which I find surprising, I've talked to credit card companies, and they'll say, you know, what? Give us your 10-digit credit card number. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're the ones that should be most concerned about fraud because they're liable for it.
Absolutely.
And they're teaching you to, they should just ask for your last 4 digits and, you know, not the whole thing because...
Yeah. Well, it does kind of feel like everyone has your Social Security number.
Well, speaking of that, you know, one of the things that's very scary for the older population is their Medicare card. Their number for Medicare is their Social Security number. So when they're asked to provide it or they carry that card around their wallet and they lose their wallet, there you go.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, it's kind of like when the driver's license numbers used to be your Social Security number. They should really change that in Medicare.
Absolutely.
Yeah, also, I would prefer if you stop mentioning older people, particularly since...
Well, you know, next month is Older Americans Month.
Thank
so
you.
It's,
oh,
it's
every,
a whole,
every show will have
thing,
to...
It's a whole thing, right?
Because Diane says I'm as old as her parents.
Yeah, I heard that already.
By the way, you can feel free to call me Mr. Croissant.
Dad. I'll just call you Dad.
Dad.
You know, a couple other things to notice, you know, if we're scaring everybody to death, there is protection. When you're using your debit or credit card, there are laws that protect you on the compliance standpoint that require banks to investigate and pay you back for things that are stolen as long as you're checking your account statements. And we just really encourage people, check your balances, make sure that you notice if there's transactions that you don't recognize. Checks, too. We're seeing a huge uptick in check fraud. Because of mailbox fraud. You know, the bills will get stolen out of the mailbox down here at the local post office, and then the checks will be altered and used for the fraudsters, as we call them.
Now, are you seeing replication of Montecito Bank and Trust checks, or just random checks with the, you know, the routing numbers on the
all
bottom?
Over the place. I mean, we've definitely seen clients having their Montecito Bank and Trust checks altered. You know, businesses that have paid large bills and dropped them down at the local post office and then had them altered and changed, and they don't find out till their, you know, Cox or whoever it is calls to say my bill didn't make its way. There were three gang members from LA that were arrested last year with these phishing devices in their car. And we talk about phishing in the online environment being, you know, PH. This is phishing equipment, phishing. Literally phishing. What they're doing is they're taking like something that's the size of maybe a Kleenex box. And they're taking a rat trap and lighting it until the juice falls down over the Kleenex box, tying a little fishing line onto it, sticking it in the blue bins outside of the U.S. Postal Office, and they're pulling out bills. And then they spend their evenings going through and modifying the checks. And we were talking at the break about how to prevent this. One of the things that's harder to acid wash on checks is a gel pen. So use gel pens when you're paying your checks, or pay your bills online using online banking. You know, what's old is new again. I think 2014, we saw maybe two cases of check fraud. 2015, it was up to over 30. And now, month to date, we've had clients reporting about 24 check fraud cases year to date. So it's really increasing. We're seeing cashier's checks from other banks out of state or in the state that are counterfeited. So cashier's checks can't even be relied on anymore. Customers will come in with a big cashier's check, deposit it, and be asked to send out a wire the next day from these crooks. They think they maybe have a job they got online. We had at least three cases year to date. One where a customer thought they were hired as a mystery shopper and came in with this fake check and came into our local branch, and the branch manager was great and sat down and said, look, I don't think this is right. Can you share with me where you found this job? Gave him the email, and lo and behold, the email explained all kinds of things, but not what to do with the money once it was deposited, and no checklist to do your mystery shopping of the business. Another client was hired to do a survey, quote unquote. Another client was hired to wrap their car with advertising for a business, and they got a check to go pay for it, and they were supposed to go pay to have the business wrapped, and then the check got returned a couple days later. So check fraud is also a thing to be thinking about.
How do you think this has been received? I mean, are people saying to you, I want to bank at the bank because this is a... I mean, if this has become a really good differentiating factor in mm-hmm. the bank's business model?
I mean, I really think it is. And I when I'm doing my spiels around town, I always tell people, you know, you have a doctor, you have a dentist, you should have a bank or two and somebody that you trust that's watching out for your needs, because not everybody is paying attention to the warning signs and protecting customers from themselves because, you know, you're kind of in a business where maybe other banks don't want to ask the questions at the teller window and have those conversations. And we really do a lot to train our employees to.
And who gets trained? Is it everyone?
Everyone in our bank, from the board of directors on down to the tellers at the platform. We also have an internal intranet page where we do little flyers on recent fraud scams and, hey, watch out for a check that looks like this or a crook that looks like this. And
Because you actually have lots of these fraudsters using, you know, like the Montecito Bank and Trust landing page and mm-hmm. or, you know, Wells Fargo's landing page or whoever's landing page, mm-hmm. sending it out to clients. Mm-hmm. And then if they click on it, asking for their, you know, account number or something along those lines, some personal identifying.
Harder to do for Montecito Bank and Trust, because we are one of the first banks in the U.S. to have what's called a .bank domain. So our emails are harder to spoof because we have a registered .bank domain in lieu of .com. We're now Montecito.bank, and that's one of the requirements to getting into that domain is to have really good security and anti-phishing and all kinds of controls in place.
You know, just like in freedom versus a fascistic state. There's this, you know, push and pull. And I went a couple of months ago to Laos, which I have to say is not ready for prime time. And yet when I went to some little dinky store that had a cash machine, I put my card in, and 2 seconds later, money came out from my local bank in Santa Barbara. I mean, so there's this amazing connection that takes place that's very helpful to the world, and yet there are people taking advantage of it. So this is the kind of push and pull of, if you want freedom, you have to take some type of, you know, unrest. If you want to have a completely socially a controlled society, that you don't get that. So we have to pay, in a sense, for the risk of this type of crime, because we have such an ability to take advantage of this technology.
Absolutely.
Right, and with the global world, as it's becoming more and more global, you're visiting Laos and still able to use an ATM machine is pretty impressive.
And I can report back, Santa Barbara is much nicer than Laos.
we're all worried.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our last segment. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. And I have to thank, for this wonderful interview, not only Laurel, but Susie Schomer, who arranged it, one of my favorite people in town, one of the senior officers of Montecito Bank and Trust, for thinking of us and letting us get to know you, Laurel.
Fantastic. We're happy to be here.
Yes. Thanks, Susie. So, interestingly enough, while we were on break, Richard, our engineer, just got a fraudulent email, and he knew not to click on the link because he's been sitting here listening to the show. We know we helped one.
Absolutely.
So by the way, you realize, of course, we're having a show on financial fraud, and someone has the, this is a word from New York, chutzpah, to try and pull it off during the show with somebody here.
That is pretty funny.
That's a lot of gall. You know, and a lot of times when we're teaching at these sessions, there's always one person in the audience, because I always think this, right? Why don't they get a real job? I mean, if they would use their power for good instead of evil, what could we do with this world? It's really it's an amazing, amazing thing.
Now, Laurel, you gave us a packet of information on pretty much how to protect yourself, both your business and your personal self, from fraud, online fraud, cyber security, good tips. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody listening to the show wanted to receive one of these packets, could they go into a branch and get one? Or
you know, a lot of what we're doing right now is on our website. So the easiest thing to do is going to be to go there. Facebook also. We have Tip Tuesdays. And a lot of the cyber tips we're putting on there are on Tuesdays on our postings. We did a lot during tax season. We saw a lot of what we call tax return ID theft, where people's Social Security number are used to file taxes on your behalf. And then the crooks get access to your refund, right? It gets sent right to them.
Well, actually, usually if you're doing it fraudulently, you always get a really big refund.
Absolutely, right? So we had clients that were filing their taxes only to find out someone had already filed on their behalf, or the scams like you talked about, where you get the phone call from the IRS, or it's the police saying that you have a warrant out for your arrest. And
okay, so for the first 100 people that go into Montecito Bank and Trust and open up a very large account, they will get a chance to speak to Laurel. Is that?
Make sure you go to Susie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then she'll get you access to
absolutely.
Laurel.
Absolutely.
Laurel has a gatekeeper. But, you know, interestingly, I'm looking at right in front of me here the Digital Spring Cleaning Checklist.
Mm-hmm. That's by the Better Business Bureau.
The Better Business Bureau that they put in their packet of information, which is really great. You know, it talks about, you know, keep your machines clean. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean when you say keep the machines clean?
Update your operating system whenever updates come out. Don't, you know, resist the urge to say ignore or do it later, because a lot of times those operating system updates are installing patches and fixes that are because of known compromises out there. And the fraudsters aren't typically using things that are really, you know, brand new. They're relying on vulnerabilities that have already been identified, and they're attacking your computers that way. Don't keep personal information in your email box. That's one of our biggest pet peeves. When you're keeping tax returns either in your sent box or your inbox, your criminals can get access to that too once they hack into your account. So make sure that you're keeping that information separate. You know, you can always keep two separate email accounts too. Maybe you have one email account for your online shopping and another one for conducting other types of businesses, but do send those securely and encrypted if you can.
Now, do you recommend that people get encrypted email in general?
Well, yeah, especially if you're going to be sending out these types of requests. We have a secure share portal where customers can either email us securely using using functionality, or we can send them a link. And again, we're telling you not to click. But if your banker's telling you in advance, we're going to be sending you a link, and here, this is where you can go upload your documents. It's a secure way to share that information.
Excellent. And so, you know, let me go through this quickly. Just this is like a month of spring cleaning, if you will. Make sure you're secure, which is basically enhancing your security of your online accounts, making sure your passwords are up to date and complex and not just the name of your children. And the third week is digital file and purge protection, basically cleaning out taking your tax returns that your CPA just sent you out of your inbox, saving them on the hard drive. And the fourth is cleaning up your online reputation, which is good for everybody.
Yes. Be careful what you're putting on that Facebook profile.
Laurel, thank you so much. And thank the bank for doing all this for its customers and for the community. This was Money Talk, and we'll see you all back here next week. Have a good day.